On the line from British Columbia in Vancouver, we have Dr. Alfred Weber. Dr. Weber, we've had you on before, and I know since we talked to you last time, lots of things are happening in the disclosure department.
Well, yes, you know, Jerry, this is an historic time, I think. And I think right before the program, just so that the listeners know, we were talking about the whole notion that they call in the political game or the political marketplace, quote, traction. And what traction means, generally, and Jerry, correct me if I'm wrong, is that a particular issue or a particular person or candidate has gotten to a posture where their issue is starting to have and engage the real political and governmental institutions, which are taking it seriously.
Right, it means you're gaining foot. Your traction literally is what it means. It means people are paying attention to you. People are beginning to talk about it. Also, another term we use in journalism is a story gets legs.
Exactly. And just on that point, as you well know, and as your listeners know, what has happened since the last time we spoke is that the Honorable Paul Hellyer, former Minister of Defense of Canada and former, as well, Deputy Prime Minister under the administration in the government of Pierre Trudeau, the fairly world-famous Prime Minister here in Canada, well, Paul, on September 25th, 2005, delivered a landmark speech at the Convocation Hall, which is one of the largest auditoriums at the University of Toronto, that is one of the greater educational institutions in North America, at the Exopolitics, Toronto Exopolitics Symposium, organized by Victor Vigiani and Mike Bird. Now, in that speech, which your listeners who may not have been able to access it can access at jerrypippin.com at a special web page.
That's right. We have it displayed there where you can find it fairly easily. If you can't find it any other way, you can go over to the UFO Files Weekly Sightings Report, and we have a little billboard of special programs that they can click on and go right to that link.
That was a landmark speech, and it ended with a standing ovation when Mr. Hellyer generously quoted from the book Exopolitics and said that the Decade of Contact, which is a proposal for a 10-year publicly funded period, we take this issue out of the closet, away from the black budget, and begin to put in public funds to look at and to discover various aspects of our Earth's existing inside of a populated universe. Well, now, what has occurred since that time is a virtual, in some ways, a political firestorm. And as follows, there was a political development here in Canada in which this has to do with Canadian national politics, in which a national election was called, which is now ongoing. The parliamentary system here in Canada, so it's different from the states where you have fixed elections. Here, where if you have coalitions inside the parliament of the various parties, the government at all times has to maintain a majority on major issues, what they call having the confidence. And in this case, all the minority parties got together and brought down and voted to bring down the government and the parliamentary system, which triggered a new election. There's advantages to it because it tends to support democracy and to keep the particular administration that's in power on their toes on any given day. And the long and short of it is that the main minority party, And believe me, you listeners on ExoPolitics will want to hear this, is the Conservative Party, and they basically support the administration of George W. Bush as a state. They're for the war in Iraq, they're for U.S. missile defense, and they're for the weaponization of space because they're for U.S. missile defense. Well, the leader of the Conservatives, just a few weeks ago, Stephen Harper, said that if he won the election, he was going to call for a no-confidence vote. If he won the election, he would push, he would have Canada join U.S. missile defense. And we here in Canada, we the peace forces, the extra-political forces that fought very hard in our last election, in June of 2004, we had won that, and the government of Canada, under the Liberals, Paul Martin, had stayed out of U.S. missile defense. So this was like a key issue because Paul Hellyer had just said, look, the $600 billion, he said this in September in his speech, the $600 billion that the U.S. Space Command is planning to spend in 2010 on space-based weapons, part of those may be to use them against, ethical extraterrestrial civilizations that are now visiting Earth and that have not indicated that they are hostile. In fact, the remote viewing evidence demonstrates prima facie that they have a positive intent towards us. And they sort of want us to kind of evolve out our permanent war economy. So given that, given the fact that former Minister of Defense Hellyer had spoken in September and made these announcements, then when the conservative leader, Stephen Harper, came forward a few weeks ago and said, we're going to call an election, and we're going to put missile defense on the agenda, we saw that what that means is that Canada all of a sudden would be supporting Star Wars against the ETs. So we went and we released a news article, Jerry, which is getting back to our question, a story that has legs, and it was picked up by Yahoo News and various other news outlets. And the last official count that we have, they keep a special counter on this, is that news story, quote, end of quote, was downloaded, and this is as of about 2 days ago, by more than 500,000 journalists worldwide. These are professional journalists who subscribe to a particular journalist service. It was actually downloaded. Not that it was emailed to them. It's that they downloaded it. It was 577,000 journalists. And not only that, more than 250,000, 250,000 media outlets specially asked for that story. And what the story said was that the former Minister of Defense of Canada asked the Canadian Parliament to hold public hearings on relations with extraterrestrials.
Now, what is the status of that at this point? He's made that statement, that question he asked for that to happen. Is it likely to happen?
Oh, we are going to make it happen. This is where the status stands today. And today is the day that lives in infamy. It's December 7th.
Yes, it is.
2005. So this is a status report as of today because we're in a fluid political situation. And I just want to explain it to the listeners so that they can follow it, because this is actually a practical lesson in how exopolitics works. We have two, as in the United States, we have two chambers to our parliament that they have in the Congress of the states. We have a Canadian Senate, and we have a Canadian House of Commons that corresponds to the House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll describe where this initiative of Mr. Hellyer's, and there are three non-governmental organizations that have joined in this. One is the Toronto Exopolitics Symposium. The other is a U.S.-based nonprofit organization, which your listeners may be familiar with, the Disclosure Project, based in Washington, D.C., under Dr. Stephen Greer. And the third is My organization, which is a nonprofit organization called the Institute for Cooperation in Space, and we came together as a sort of a consortium of non-governmental organizations who've worked together in the past. Our president, Dr. Cal Rosin, our general counsel, Daniel Sheehan, and myself, the international director of ISIS, were all Disclosure Project witnesses at the Disclosure Project press conference in Washington, D.C. at the National Press Club on May 9, 2001. And the Disclosure Project and ISIS held a major conference on disclosure here in Vancouver, British Columbia, on September 9, 2001, 2 days before 9/11, at Simon Fraser University.
Mm-hmm.
We've worked together in the past, and we came together and joined Paul Hellyer, who was the first major Canadian politician. Paul Hellyer's a prominent man. If you go up to our resource site, exopolis.com, you'll see that he's been on the cover of Time magazine. He was a phenom here in Canada, the youngest elected member to the Canadian House of Commons at the age 25, and he was the longest standing member of Time, of the House of Commons. So he's somewhat of a very well regarded statesperson.
Now when the conservatives who were trying to get this special election called in Canada, along with other minority parties, how do they take to the idea of disclosure? I mean, it seems to me that they should have been careful, that they might have gotten what they asked for,
right?
Because there may be some unintended consequences from their standpoint, and a plus for your side.
Yes, you know, I'm very glad that you asked that, because today, December 7th, this is a rapidly changing situation here in Canada. We only have 30 allowed days for our campaign, so that the election is going to be on January 23rd, 2006, and there's going to be downtime during Christmas. So we have, here it's not like in the States where you've got that kind of that three-year period. Here it's just 30 days. Having a call an election, everybody gets out there and runs for 30 days, and then we have the vote at the end of 30 days. But you asked a very key question, because this is not going to be a process where it's going to happen from one day to the next. We've now engaged this issue permanently in the political life and the political machinery and governmental and parliamentary machinery of Canada. So that where things stand right now, we have to look at each body. Number one, in the Canadian Senate, where we first filed this on March 10th, 2005, at a public hearing of the Canadian Senate Committee on National Security and Defense in Winnipeg, Canada, we filed this request with Mr. Hellyer's name on it, and it kind of bubbled, you know, throughout the government machinery. Where that stands is as follows. We got a notice back from the Senate about 6 weeks ago that they were completing a defense status report on the defense posture of Canada, and they could not hold hearings in 2005. So we submitted a written notice to them on behalf of our consortium of NGOs that we would be refiling with them for public hearings in early 2006. So probably right after the January 23rd 2006 election, ourselves, the three non-governmental organizations, together with former Minister of Defense Paul Hellyer, will refile for public hearings with the Senate.
So in other words, none of you in Canada, none of your groups, you're not going to let this go by.
Oh, no. Oh, absolutely not. This is the beginning, Jerry. this is the kind of the opening chapters of something that's going to end, I believe, or I hope, very successfully. I just want to mention to your listeners that in Canada, the Senate, unlike the U.S., is an appointed body. It's kind of the version of the House of Lords, because our head of state is the Queen of England.
Mm-hmm.
And so that the Senate is an appointed body of distinguished thinkers. And there are advantages to that, because they tend to be very thoughtful elder people who are appointed for the rest of their lives or whatever, and, you know, are up to a certain mandatory retirement age. But they have dealt successfully with controversial issues like same-sex marriage, which is now legal in Canada, and it first came up through the Senate. Second, decriminalization of
certain drugs like marijuana.
Yeah,
I can see the, you know, that's one of the problems we have here in the States, is they're continually running, and anybody in the Senate, for instance, even though it's a six-year term, jumps up and says, I want to hear about these UFOs and these ETs. Guess what? That'll be a commercial against them in the election.
Exactly. You know, whereas here, senators are appointed and are paid to look at the longer-range, thornier issues.
You know, you referred in a document one time. I wanted to ask you about this. I love this term, off-planet cultures. You remember using that phrase?
Sure. You know, Jerry, that I must tell you, it was my co-director at the Institute for Cooperation in Space, a very distinguished woman activist and former executive in the aerospace industry, Dr. Carol Rosen, who actually coined that term. And I like yourself, I find it a very evocative term, because it gives more of a feeling that, yeah, we're dealing with kind of a living society.
Well, yeah, and you know, you talked to me about, in great detail one time, about a project where people were actually, you know, making contact with other terrestrial worlds, at least in remote viewing-wise.
Yes, you know, and that that's a fascinating project. If your listeners would like to go, that's our main ISIS project in what we call public interest diplomacy with off-planet cultures, and we have documentation for that, which is now on the internet at www.peaceinspace.net, and that project is called the Star Dreams Initiative. And SDI, in other words, SDI in the weapons world is called Strategic Defense Initiative, which is to create weapons of warfare in space. Our Star Dreams Initiative, which is a different SDI, is to create a future opening for humankind to reach out to and establish communication with these advanced off-planet cultures that can offer humankind a great deal, and that aren't out to eat us. You know, it's not like a lot of people say, oh, this is going to be as when Christopher Columbus and sort of the Europeans hit the New World, and they just ravaged the Aboriginal and Indigenous cultures of both America. Well, that's not the case here. You might ask, well, how do we know that?
In fact, I was going to ask that.
Yeah, and this is why it's, you know, there's that philosophy in manufacturing, that if you're putting together automobiles, it's called just in time.
Yes, that's when each of the pieces show up at just the right time. You don't have a lot of inventory time tied up.
Exactly. And I like to use that, or it's a very useful analogy to look at the function of some of these technologies that were first developed for military and intelligence applications that now can be applied to the peaceful communication with extraterrestrial civilizations. And one such technology that has arrived just in time when we need it is called scientific remote viewing, or just plain remote viewing. Now, remote viewing was developed at the Stanford Research Campus while I was there as a futurist in the mid-1970s. In fact, it was the two scientists who were under contract with the Central Intelligence Agency with the U.S. Department of Defense, Dr. Hal Puthoff and Russell Targ. Those two gentlemen were the gentlemen that first brought me in, and they were the first persons that I met at Stanford Research Institute in the fall of 1976, when I went to them with a proposal to do a White House extraterrestrial communication study, because President Jimmy Carter had just been elected president on a platform that he would open up the UFO and ET files. So remote viewing has been with us now for almost 30 years. And it was very, at first it was developed by the CIA and by the Department of Defense, DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, because it was an extremely accurate espionage tool. And remote viewing is completely consistent with advanced physics, and advanced physics is beginning to show that time is a dimension just like space, and you can begin to map yourself inside the time-space continuum, such that if you are at point, say, ABCD, D being the time coordinate, you're a point ABCD in time and space. Well, in that maze, that four-dimensional matrix, you just say, well, let's go to point EFYG, and that'll take you to another point in the time-space matrix. And when and these are protocols on which the Defense Department of the United States has spent many millions of dollars developing, and the, you know, and they're battle tested. Some of the exopolitics commentators have said that is on a scientific basis of using the scientific method of an accurate using laboratory protocols, you get replicable information over and over and over again, and that means you've met the test of the scientific method. And so the remote viewer in the military context, say, goes into what they call subspace, where the mind of the trained remote viewer on his laboratory protocols achieves a space that is, I would say, almost outside of the time-space continuum. You call it at the soul level, where you're doing soul-to-soul, so it's outside of time and space, which is more of a medium. Time and space is more of a medium, an ether or a matrix. So from that perspective, then, the mind of the deeper mind, the deeper self of the remote viewer can access any point inside that matrix along the time-space continuum. And that was so great about being able to go, say, in the military intelligence context, and, you know, this battery of nuclear missiles that would be out there, and you might want to know about. Now, what happened in the late 1980s was that inside U.S. Army intelligence, and Major General Albert Stubblebine III, who headed up Army intelligence, talks about is that the remote viewers, the U.S. Army intelligence remote viewers and other DOD remote viewers, began to say, well, let's take remote viewing and begin to look at possible other civilizations that are on other planets, and they were able to do so.
And do you have any information about what they're reporting back? I mean, these remote planets?
We have a great deal, Jerry, that's on record. We have actual transcripts, and Major General Stubblebine, in a 1991 speech, which you can access at www.peaceandspace.net, he actually made this public at a symposium, and actually made public the fact that U.S. Army intelligence remote viewers were routinely accessing what appears to be an intelligent civilization with spacecraft and the whole, you know, nine yards, that is active under the surface of Mars. Now, since then, since the late 1980s, some other remote viewers who have been serving as informal advisors to our Star Dreams initiative have begun to develop extensive transcripts of communication with not only with specific off-planet civilizations, but also, and this is where the exopolitics model comes in, because what the exopolitics model says is that not only do we live in a populated universe, but it's composed of evolving intelligent civilizations that operate under some form of universal law and have some form of governance system, like we do here on Earth. So what we've been able to do, and what our informal advisors have been able to do, is to develop transcripts of remote viewing, interactive communications with some of these galactic governance bodies. You know, they would be like your UN type of thing. And
You know, it's mind-boggling in many ways. And the do you have any evidence of the big rage right now in the UFO area?
Yeah.
Is this situation where we have actually had people go to another planet and other people from another planet come here, and they're talking about the planet Serpio, which may or may not exist, I don't know.
Yeah.
And do you have any evidence of anything like that happening at all? An alien transfer program?
Yeah. Now, that's an excellent question. Our search to date, there may be remote, that is, I do not wish to make any comment one way or the other.
Uh-huh. Yeah, in other words, your mind is open about it.
Yeah, but I have not come across remote viewing evidence as of yet of that particular project. The remote viewing evidence that is on record so far is of other civilizations.
And one of those is below the surface of Mars.
Yes, and does not, and we have not come across as of yet remote viewing evidence of an existing diplomatic exchange. Now, there is a tremendous, as you know, record in the UFO literature of possible such diplomatic exchanges over the past 60 years. But with regard to the remote viewing evidence, there may be remote viewing evidence that out there that we just haven't come across yet, or that may be classified. inside U.S. or other military in intelligence programs. So what we, in our Star Dreams initiative at the Institute for Cooperation in Space, wish to do is to initiate a project for public interest diplomacy by non-governmental organizations, and thereby bringing on international institutions such as the UN, using remote viewing. Now, some of the backdrop on that is this, is that a number of us within ISIS, the Institute, were very active in the mid-1980s with what they called the Glasnost period in the then Soviet Union and the Perestroika. That was Perestroika was restructuring, and Glasnost was kind of the opening. And at that time, it was the non-governmental organizations in the West who were able to get around the embargo of the Iron Curtain and do individual to individual, what they call citizen diplomacy, with the with its other citizens in the Soviet Union and with other organizations, and having more of a one world approach there. Now, in that same way, both Dr. Cal Raz and myself and others were very active in that era. And so in the same way, what we're trying to do now in the 21st century is to do public interest diplomacy with off-planet cultures. The information that we have via remote viewing, both with galactic authorities and with one specific off-planet culture, is that they do not want to deal with any one nation. They want to deal with the world as a whole, and that would imply more of a United Nations. Now, we have, as a matter of international law, my own background, incidentally, I'm a graduate of Yale Law School in the international field, and I've been an international lawyer for, now almost 40 years. We have existing international legal framework for this type of program. 1978, as you know, Jerry, the United Nations General Assembly passed a resolution, approved a resolution by vote of the UN General Assembly, which encouraged all UN member nations to carry out programs, research and other programs relating to extraterrestrial life. So we have that established as a precedent going back to 1978, when, interestingly, Jimmy Carter was, had a close encounter of the first kind in 1978. He was president of the U.S., and it was Sir Eric Gary, Prime Minister of Grenada, who also had close encounter of the first kind, who brought that resolution to the United Nations General Assembly, where it was approved. So we're building now on almost 30 years of international law, using military and intelligence proven technology of remote viewers.
Yeah, you know this is just a fascinating subject, Dr. Weber, and we could go on for hours about it, but I'd be remiss if I didn't get into the USA exopolitical platform. And I want to ask a question. Is it true that there's going to be an effort to make every candidate for office here in the U.S. in the off-year elections answer questions about UFOs?
Yes, and for listeners who would want to find out more about that, you can go to www.exopolitics.com, and there'll be complete contact information there, an email address that you can address to, also an 800 number that you can call for offices for setting this up, and And the concept of it, Jerry, is very, very simple. And it actually has been in practice in U.S. politics for decades. And that is that if you go to any, whatever the interest group is, if you go to the Americans for Democratic Action, if you go to one of the more conservative groups, you will find that they all rate candidates for office, or they all rate office holders on the basis of what they call litmus tests. In other words, will this candidate or will this office holder vote yay or nay on whatever my particular issue is? Be that an issue that, say, relates to the Patriot Act or relates to right to life, you know, depending on where you stand, where one stands on the political issue. Well, the issue of an extraterrestrial presence in U.S. governmental policy support it is a legitimate issue in public discourse in the U.S. So what this effort has done is for the 2006 U.S. midterm election, under the U.S. Constitution, there are 535 elected political offices at the federal level, and that's the 100 senators, and that's the 435 members of the House of Representatives. And on the off year, a certain number of them, of those offices, are up for real.
Right, all of the House and a third of the Senate.
Exactly, and if you go to exopolitics.com, you'll discover a link there that you can click on, and you'll see exactly which specific offices are up for grabs and which aren't, and whether your, of course, whether your senator is up for grabs, and how to contact your particular congressperson.
No, Alfred, I'm no friend of the Bush administration and the neoconservative movement at all. Anybody that knows me personally. But I want to ask you something that they probably would like for somebody to ask, and that is, why are they so intent on building a Star Wars weapon system to counter ETs from outer space? Do they have evidence that not all of them are friendly?
Well, that's a key question. That's really a key question, because on the one hand, there's sort of two views of it. If there's evidence that the ETs aren't friendly, then there's a justification. But if this is another case of, oh, Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction, and we've got to go over and spend $77 billion and $200 billion, and we've got to get 2,000 U.S. service people killed, and we've got to make a mess of Iraq, in order for Halliburton and the military industry to make some bucks.
I understand what you're saying. We suspect that really on most of the motives are not national defense or protection of humanity, but more just to make a little money.
Exactly. And, Jerry, this...
Actually, a lot of money.
Exactly. The budget for 2010, right now the U.S. is spending about $85 billion a year developing space-based weapons, and we're in 2005 right now, and the budget that Congress has already put down for 2010 is $600 billion. Now, how come they're going from $85 billion to $600 billion in 2010? You know, and that's what former Minister of Defense Hellyer came out and said. Look, a retired U.S. general told me. And even Colonel Corso and General Trudeau back in 1947, they set the course back there. Now, let's go back to the question, what is the evidence that there is a threat in outer space? Well,
it seems to me that the evidence is that there's a group extraterrestrials that are like the United Nations, interplanetary association of some sort, and looks like they would take care of that.
Yeah, i.e. are the military industrial technology, the military intelligence technology of remote viewing, which our defense, which U.S. Defense Department counts on to keep itself safe, tells you that the ETs in space are not hostile, they're actually ethical. And if we have a problem with unethical ETs, that problem is actually not a military problem. It appears as though, and this is what we're asking for in the decade of contact, you know, we're saying let's put in some public funds to discover, okay, what is our place in the universe? It appears that somewhere in the distant past, there may have been some sort of a civil war that occurred in this quadrant or in this solar system. This is, we're not entering the realm of speculation. And there may be still remnants of those breakaway ETs, but they've long been taken care of, and they're more of a, quote, what we call spiritual problem than a military problem. And that, in fact, the ETs that are out there are, you know, quite friendly. And they're looking out for us according to, this is according to remote viewing, what we could call a higher plan, or a plan for the whole galactic government to bring our planet back into normal status. So we may be working on, there was a crucial 2 or 3 days back in 1947 after the Roswell crash, where the U.S. military, which was on kind of still on that Cold War, post-World War II threading, that said, the ETs are a threat, and they've built a multi-trillion dollar economy and made lots of bucks since then by promoting that misperception.
It's interesting, we could go on for hours. January 23rd, you'll have a new government there in Canada. And we'll have to wait till November here in the United States. But you really feel that this issue is going to be part of the political campaign.
Well, let me say a couple of things, Jerry. What we've been able to do, because Minister Hellyer has stepped forward, a man of his stature, he's been on the cover of Time magazine, you know, he's really a person whose word carries stature within military and in intelligence and political circles. Because he's been able to do that now, in a kind of a, what we call a North American context, that is both the U.S. and Canada, if we take an agency like NORAD, that's a joint Canadian-U.S. agency. So in a NORAD sense, charged with tracking UFO traffic and ET traffic, we have a gentleman who used to run NORAD from the Canadian point of view now put his hat in the ring and say, we got to look at this. So that we have to look at it from the dynamics of both U.S. and Canadian policy. I know on the Canadian side, we're going to go forward after the election on the Senate side, and now in the House, we don't know what's going to happen, but we sure have our feelers out right now. There are four campaigns going, the Liberals, the Conservatives, the Bloc Québécois, they kind of represent Quebec, and the New Democratic Party, which would be like the Liberal Democrats down in the U.S. We are now have our feelers out to the leaders and all the candidates and all those parties to brief the leaders, and we just had a conference call with Dr. Stephen Greer and Mr. Victor Bugiani, and if not in this campaign, then in the future, we're going to, Dr. Greer is ready to fly up with high retired U.S. generals who give direct testimony of the extraterrestrial presence and brief the Canadian leaders here.
So he actually has five retired generals willing to go on record.
I don't know the exact number, but we have now initiated a project whereby we are seeking to brief the leaders of the four parties here on this issue. Whether that happens during the campaign before the January election or after that, but we're going to be going forward on that. Similarly, in the U.S., I put it to very high-ranking people within the ET community. On record, I said, well, let's come up with a Paul Hellyer of the United States. Let's have someone who has been in a high office and who has knowledge of this come forward and, you know, put their hat in the ring and say, yes, this is true. And there are people working on that who say that, oh, we're very, very close to have a high-ranking person come forward. But while we wait for that, Jerry, what we're going to do in the U.S., and this will be launching in January, because the primary season is going to be starting already in March of 2006.
That's right, and they're selecting the candidates now, in the smoke-filled rooms.
Exactly. So what we're going to do is, in the time-tested tradition of any whatever issue of whatever political stripe, because disclosure can be a conservative issue, it can be a Republican issue, a Democratic, it's sort of a trans-party issue. And we're going to be asking, we put together an exopolitics platform. It's very simple. It has 3 points. Number one is disclosure. Number two is funding, that is government funding for this thing, for to have an investigation and a decade of contact. And number three is diplomacy. So it's disclosure, funding, and diplomacy. We don't use war to go to communicate with the advanced extraterrestrial cultures. We use diplomacy.
It's a good point. Good point. Now, we always enjoy talking to you, Dr. Weber. We're talking with Alfred Weber, Institute for Cooperation in Space. We have a link to the websites. I know you'll keep us informed on what's happening. Any closing thoughts?
Well, we're sort of at the end of 2005. So I just want to wish everybody a good holiday season, but also kind of an end of the year. I think that 2005, if we review it in history, will be when a major breakthrough was made, because the Honorable Paul Hellyer came forward at the Toronto Exopolitics Symposium and asked the question, do we really want, you know, are weapons in space really being put to for war against ETs? And, you know, we really have to look at this. And number two, looking forward to 2006, I truly believe that this will be a banner year for the beginning of a genuine exopolitical breakthrough and process and awareness within the political mainstream, such that the exopolitical issue, do we live in a populated universe? Are there advanced off-planet cultures, and should we use diplomacy with them? That issue is now going to enter the lexicon of mainstream political process, and it's about time.
Well, I can agree with you on that. Thanks very much, Dr. Weber, and we'll talk to you soon.
Great.